Hello everybody, welcome to Learn With Us, and today is the first focused episode of Learn Engineering. Today in the show is David Lofthouse.
Hi.
I have to congratulate you on the grooming. You're putting all us guys to shame here.
Quick ones on with the car, and it's fine.
Yeah. Does it need like any special like oils or anything like that?
Yeah, it does. I put when I clean it, I put beard oil.
Yeah.
And maybe a bit of Brill Cream, old school Brill Cream in the hair.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. Nothing special. For me, there's nothing special.
So what made you decide to get into becoming a locksmith?
Well, I was made redundant just over 4 years ago. And then after going on to the job centre to sign on and claim benefits, the lady said, you know, you can retrain. So I'm thinking, well, why didn't you tell me this, you know, months ago? So eventually I retrained through the job centre and they paid for the course. So it's something mechanical. I've worked with machinery for the past 28 years. So, you know, that was the logic thing. And I've always wanted to work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's progressionary from that. You know, swift kick up the butt sort of thing.
Yeah.
The way I was told was any not damage, but anything you do must be repairable by yourself or hidden. So, for example, under a handle. So if you put the handle back on, you can't see there's been anybody working on it.
Yeah.
So the two key things, really. I mean, the first thing, most of the guys that I know, they will pick the lock first. If that fails, try a different door. Pick that one. You know, maybe you've got an easier one on the front door or the back door than your first attempt or your first sort of method of entry.
Mm-hmm.
Next step, windows. You know, you've got to look for the weakest point of getting in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to, in a sense, you've got to think like a criminal, as bad as it sounds.
Yeah. If you look at these keys now with like, they have like tracks in the inside of the lock, and then you have like the normal keys, and then you have like dots as well. Like there's three things you have to pick at the same time. Like why do even people bother trying picking those things?
Like those.
Yeah, like that, yeah.
Yeah, they're a higher security than what you get off the shelf.
Yeah.
You can buy something like this off the shelf, yeah, you know, but for me, that's my own key, my own house.
Yeah.
So, you know, it opens my French doors and it opens my front door on one key. So if I want to add to that, if I want to put more padlocks on the garage or the shed, I can get the lock to fit the key.
Yeah.
So in that respect, you're still only carrying one key around with you and not bunches of them.
What happens if you lose the key though?
Yeah, you'd have to change all the locks.
Yeah. Expensive.
I don't lose keys.
Yeah.
Because I flip them to my waist. You know, I don't care if it makes me look like a jailer.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't got that many keys flying around, but
yeah.
I've only got one in my pocket and one on my waist.
Yeah. What do you think about all these movies that talk about the master key and the guy brings out the key and the master key and he opens the door?
Yeah, the skeleton keys. I mean, this particular one is, I suppose it could be considered a skeleton key. It's actually for, it's an NKS or radar key, and it opens all the disabled toilets throughout the UK.
Right.
So that one key will fit 9,000 toilets.
It doesn't look very hard to pick.
I'm going to take a better look.
I can't see because I've got my... Let me just move my photo booth.
Yeah, but, I mean... It's,
oh, that's
it's,
a lever. Yeah, that is going to be hard to pick, yeah. Those things are... I watched a YouTube video on five levers. I was like, forget that, man.
Yeah, I mean, three levers, two levers, and there are sort of one levers in, you know, sort of older hardware. But I believe that's a six lever. Could be mistaken, but it's definitely a five lever, if not. But yeah, they are more difficult to pick than a Euro cylinder, for example.
The thing is about all these like fancy doors and stuff like that, the thieves are not going to go for the good doors and the that are like well secured. They're going to go for the windows or so. What's the point of having a secure door, really?
In the same instance, a window makes a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if it's a double glazed unit, it's going to make an almighty bang.
Why does double glazing make a bigger bang?
Because of the air pressure inside, it's like a vacuum unit. And most, especially the large panels of glass, they actually, if you push them in the middle, they tend to flex. The hardest point of the UPVC, or the most difficult to break, would be in the centre.
Really?
Because it moves. If you push, obviously gently if you've got your own, but push on the centre of the glass, you'll see the window buckle.
Yeah.
You've seen it on films like APG or what they call armour plate glass, or plate glass as most people call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they throw things at it, it bounces back.
Yeah.
It's because it's designed with a certain amount of flex.
Yeah, I can never quite understand that. As a kid, I used to play football in the park because we didn't really have very good computer games that day. And a few times I kicked the football and hit off the window and it just bounced off the window.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was a single glazed unit, it'd probably smash.
Yeah.
Because you haven't got that pressure internally.
Yeah.
And the sort of... I'm not sure if they're laminated or they're just toughened glass.
Yeah.
Well, they're definitely stronger than the single glazed units.
Yeah. Because, like, that door behind you, like, if I was wanting to break into the house, then I wouldn't go for a lot. I'd just smash the glass. But is that glass, like, hard to break?
Yeah, you'd have to climb the fence as well. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, it's flexible. It's glass in a way. If you think about glass, it's silicate. So it's... It is a stronger sort of form of carbon.
Right.
You know, if you try to drill glass, as in put a hole in to hang it up, for example, it would actually dull the normal drills, like the metal drills or the hard plate drills. You need a diamond drill to cut through glass. Okay. So, you know, in that respect, a normal drill wouldn't drill a hole through glass, it'd just shatter it.
Yeah.
So I think it's the way to put together myself, or makes the strength. I mean, obviously Craig Brooks, who does the double glazing on LinkedIn, he'd probably know more about the glass side of things.
Yeah. So are you also involved in like security cameras?
No, I don't do CCTV. I'm trying to get into sort of entry systems. So things like your key fobs and access control, that sort of thing. So you open a door with a key, and it's a fob. So show it to the reader, and it'll open the door.
Yeah.
I'm looking at trying to learn how to do that. But I may need to do courses on that one.
Are those more secure than locks?
Not really. They can be used in conjunction with locks.
Right.
For example, the night latch, the Yale type lock, it latches into a key. So when it goes in, it sort of hooks in behind. You can have electronic keys. So yeah, you close it when you go out, and you can offer a fob. So the key, instead of sort of sitting rigid, so it's quite solid, that falls away and it allows it to push it open.
Yeah.
So it's sort of just it relaxes its tension. It works on like piezoelectric retention. You show your fob, that electric drops, allows you to push open the door without actually turning the key.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, I'll have to realize that again. I'll just get off my head like that to say yeah.
you got to play in it as they push to exit.
Yeah.
Generally, it's either a latch, an electronic latch, or it's a magnetic lock, mag lock.
Mm-hmm.
So you see like a big boxy thing above the door, and it just basically drops the power the current that feeds it. As soon as that current's off, you can open the door.
Okay. So like I've seen people like they can get into houses with just this like piece of plastic that's sort of white and they can slot it in the door and it goes behind the corner. Is that really possible?
That's yeah. Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah, I've done that on I've done that on countless stores.
Yeah, so these cards, what's going on? How does that exactly go behind the door? If the door's tight on an angle, how does the card plastic card bend around the corner like that and open the door?
It's what it's made out of. Remember the old kitchen work surfaces? You may be too young to remember it, but the old kitchen work surfaces were Formica.
Is that stuff sort of was quite covered as well? Is that
Yeah, well, it went on to the work surfaces in the kitchen
right? I'm not
to give
really
it that glossy finish.
right. Okay, yeah, I
Long
kind of hear.
before the modern stuff. Well, basically, it was a veneer called Formica.
Yeah.
It's a variety of that, so it has the flexibility to go around the door frames and the architrave, but it has the strength. And if you're not holding it properly, it can actually cut you.
Oh.
But it is quite sharp. So when it's raining and dark, and you could be prone to a few cuts and scratches. But yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, that only works on it in a push sense. So if the door opens inwards and you're outside, it would only work on in that scenario.
Yeah.
If the door opens the other way, you have to find something that fits from the outside towards you. So the pushing wouldn't work. It's not strong enough to pull anything.
Yeah.
So again, that's a different tool, which I'm hopefully getting some from my own design. I'm hopefully getting some made.
Right. So how do you know that your door is generally secure and secure as in it'll take a thief too much of a time to get it open in relation to risk of being getting caught?
Well, while we're waiting, well, technical difficulties. I got this for this particular one. They have these in the newer homes, so you can unlock and lock it from the inside.
Right.
This is the target for any thief. I'm not sure if you can see. It's
Yeah, I
like
can see it. Yeah.
yeah,
Yep.
that's the target for every thief. So once a common attack would be called lock snapping. So if it's sticking out too far, they'll break the lock and it'll break away there. And as that breaks away, this falls off, and then they can use other implements inside to unlock the door.
Right.
So if you've got something like that, it's not very secure. Same sort of thing as the thumb turn. If it's too close to a letterbox, like you said, what happens if they get things like an old coat hanger? Put that in the letterbox and manipulate that thumb turn to unlock the door. So they could be in the house without any damage from the exterior.
An
So
old
yeah, I
coat
think
hanger.
I think a coat, because if you think that, if you put a coat hanger through that, it's only a wire. There's nothing to stop you moving that around.
Yeah.
And the same, we've got different tools to use for that. But in this particular one, again, that lock picking, that's where it comes in, because that itself, that's locked.
Yeah.
Now that won't unlock without picking it.
Yeah.
I've still got the access from inside with this thumb turn.
So that looks just
So
like,
anyway,
is that just as
sorry.
easy to open as a Yale lock? Is that just as easy to pick as a Yale?
Yeah, I mean, they've got varying. This is what you're. These are the pins inside.
Yeah.
So basically, imagine a row of pins. So your key shape is up and down. So imagine a row of pins that fit inside those ridges and those valleys. And the purpose of the key is to line them up. So you've got six in the line, which will create what I call a shear line that allows the lock to turn. So if you've got one sticking up, that's not going to go past it. But the wrong key, for example, wouldn't work, even if there's one position not cut properly. So imagine, like for example, your key would have these sort of ridges, little triangular ridges, and each one of those either goes around the pin or pushes the pin. Again, that's down to the position, so they're no different. This has got six pins. The one, the key I showed you earlier from my house, has got 11 pins. It depends, most of the night latch, the Yale type locks, I've got five.
Yeah.
So you've got one less pin to defeat.
Yeah.
And then, to be honest with you, they're not as secure as you'd like to think.
And once you can defeat one or two pins reliably, then to add an extra two pins is not that harder. But as you start adding more pins, then there's more chance of you making a slight mistake. And yep. And when you make a mistake, you have to go all the way back to the start again, which can make it even more frustrating.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, I think there are some where you'll get more feedback. So the pin, if it's rotating, for example, it rotates clockwise, and you start to pick it, and then you get one pin that's firm, and as you push the pin down with the pick, it rotates counterclockwise. So that then you've got to allow it to go so far to be able to pick it. But if it goes too far, it'll lock back up and all the other pins bounce back.
Yeah, as soon as you start going counterclockwise, you might as well go back to the start because you've lost it.
No, the counterclockwise, actually, sometimes it tells you what you need to do.
Right.
So it gives you a feedback of, right, you're close, but a little bit more sort of force or a little bit less force.
Yeah.
So it's actually the locks, in a, not to sound corny, it's telling you what it wants you to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's giving you that. Yeah, it's giving you that sort of sense that you're in the right place, but you need to be either pushed, firmly or a bit more gently.
Yeah.
So
like, when you're picking a lock, do you actually know if it's the first pin, and can you sort of remember the story of the lock if you have to go back to the start?
No, generally you would start from the back. So you start from the furthest pin, which could be like number six or number five.
Right.
So you start at the furthest away, so the key tip.
Right.
And then you work the way back. And it's finding them which ones move and which ones don't move.
Why would you start from the back? Because the back might not be the closest one that you can lock.
Makes no difference. That makes no difference whatsoever. That's where you start from back and you work your way forward. For example, you start here.
Yeah.
And you work forward.
Because I thought, like, you've got five pins, right? And
yeah. There's
only going to be one pin that will lock when you apply the minimum pressure, and then you find the next one, then you find the next one, then you find the next one, which might not be at the back or the front, depending on the construction of the pins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying, but that's where you have different shaped picks.
Right.
Because you may have you might have to pick from the back to the front, and then there'll be one that's holding it, pin number four, for example, but you can't get to it because you've got the wrong shaped pick. So you might have to hook over number three. So then it's a different contour of the pick profile.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you've picked all the rest and they're ready to go, but number four you've got to go back for.
Yeah.
You start 6-1 and then just go back through 6-1. Just keep going back and trying different ones to see which one's going to go next.
Right.
You'll feel a slight movement on the rotation.
So say you're given a brand new Yale lock you've never seen before, what's the chances that you'll pick it first time?
For a Yale, 5-pin. Yeah.
First time?
pretty much. I mean, some, if you've done it yourself, you know that if the longer you play with the lock, the more you know where it's going to open.
Yeah.
Because it's a learned... I suppose in a way it's your hand movement, your muscle memory. It's going to know exactly where that pin needs to open, where it needs to be left.
Hmm.
So in that respect, you've had a lock for ages, you know where it's going to open. Like a car, it's going to overheat because it's done it before.
Hmm. So, like five lever locks, do you? I've never actually tried to pick a five lever lock before because I watched a few videos on YouTube and I'm like, this is just too much to learn, you know? It's a completely different
Yeah,
world.
it is a different world. I mean, luckily we don't. I mean, I think you've got more in London because of the older buildings and the mall. So the wooden doors, big wooden doors, and you get a lot of Bannum locks, which again are another sort of high security lock. But the levers themselves, it can be a bit. You know, if you get one wrong, it may have. Basically, it's got like a cutout. So everything slides into the cutout. Above and below might have a smaller cutout, so it doesn't actually slide all the way back. They're called anti-pick notches. So obviously, if you lift it too far up, and the bolt trying to pull it back goes into that, you've got to start again.
So why do people have, why are these small Yale type keys more popular than these lever locks in general?
It's just generally ease of carry.
Yeah.
It's easier to carry, you know. And anybody who picks as a hobby or learns to pick as a hobby would tend to use padlocks to start with,
Yeah.
because there's very little variation in pressure that you need to turn it and things. You know, most padlocks, it's medium to heavy weight. It's only when you get to the high end and more expensive stuff where they put the tricks in the pins, as it were.
Yeah, I started off with this little it's a hollow, it's like plastic, but it's sort of see-through plastic, you know, and that was easy enough trying to pick. And then I had a real situation where I had to open a door, and I managed to do it. I didn't have to get a locksmith, you know.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I know this padlock quite well. So I can sit and talk to you and still pick it open because I can feel it rather than see it. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, especially like yourself, somebody's tried it and thought, yeah, it's kind of a useless skill to have. You're not seeing it without your eyes, if that makes sense. I think learning on something that's solid as opposed to the clear acrylic would be better. You're trying to visualize inside it.
Once it's sort of like a skill. Once you, yeah, actually, it's an audible skill because you're listening to the pins, and you can
Yes.
tell how close you got, and you sort of learn how it goes, and then you can. But I've never tried to pick anything like a lever or one anything with like those. I don't know. I mean, how would you pick things with those dots in there and those lines in there? And like, where do you
Right.
start?
These are basically a standard keyway, virtual keyway. The ones with the dots, as you call it, are like this is a horizontal keyway. And they're what they call a dimple lock. So you've got a standard sort of pinned lock, is in pretty much most of them, like the night latch ones. But the dimple locks, they use a slightly different tool. So instead of it being sort of thin and flat, it's more of a pole and with a little flag, so you can sort of pivot, rock it backwards and forwards. So it's effectively you're moving that like this. So this piece would be pushing down on the pins, not that way. They'd be going sideways as opposed to vertical. If that makes sense.
But how do you do both at the same time? Like you've got things that are that side and that side, so you can't really fit like three tools in the tool at the same time to.
No, but that's where your sort of learning comes into it. You know, the more you practice, the more you evolve.
The more you practice.
The more you practice, and the more you learn from that practice, you evolve and you begin to. I've got a favorite lock. It's called an Iseo, so Iseo on the front. And there's two. There's an X stick, which is a dome top. So on this piece, it's like a you know, on this plug, it's like a dome. And then you've got another one. It's got beveled edges. Now the beveled edges is 5 pin, and that's one of my favourite ones to pick because it tells you what it wants. So that again, that's a learned response, as it were, to what the lock is telling you. It's the same with everything, you know, you learn the more you're faced with these problems. I've found, and a few people in the church probably know it already, I've found ways that I don't need to touch the locks to open the door. In that, you know, I can't obviously tell you that one because that's maybe something that the criminals don't know.
Yeah. You think that a lot of criminals have spent a lot of time learning tricks from locksmiths?
Oh, no. No, I think they share that information. Like the lock snapping, for example, has been around, I'd say 20-plus years. And they're still doing it today. So it's that's not something a locksmith taught, and that's something they've obviously somebody's done it and gone, right, we can do this and pass it on.
Yeah.
So it's like everything you're sharing the information.
Yeah. So like if you think of a normal Yale lock, right, if it's basically the mechanical force of the five pins that's stopping the torque from opening a lock. But I'm thinking if you manage to like get three pins or three pins up, you've got two pins holding, could you not like whack it with something and break them? Break those little two pins?
No, as much as you think you'd like for the internals and the plugging for the brass, so it's quite soft. But then you look at the key, which looks silver or chrome, and that is again the same thing as brass. You know, there are some aluminium type, but again, it's a soft metal.
Mm-hmm.
So something will break before you can actually get it unlocked. Yeah, even if it's one pin that's out, it's still going to be strong enough not to be able to turn.
What if you welded something to the key and then once it's cooled down, then you twist it and break it?
Then you're going to snap your key. That's pretty much it. Yeah, you're not going to get it.
Imagine someone welding a door, big white light.
You'd probably melt the lock in your head anyway.
Yeah, just melt the lock, man. Who cares?
Yeah, there's quite a trend at the minute for people melting the plastic around the doors. Yeah, well, the UPVC, they melt the plastic so they can get further into the lock to break it.
Right, I see, yeah.
And that's a variation of lock snapping, but it's relatively new.
Mm-hmm. So, like, your windows there, are they, like... I mean, stop me if I'm asking too many questions about your house, like... Because those windows, are those, like... Is that a decoration, or is that, like, those lines, like, security things? Like, in the room behind the doors there with the...
Oh, no, that's just different, yeah.
I should think they were, like...
it's an easy lighting. That's all it is. It's
yeah.
Just to make it look nice. It was on when I bought the house 14 years ago. It was on there, so
yeah. You see quite a lot of houses more in Europe than London, but you see a lot of houses on the first floor. They have bars on the windows, and okay, that's good to stop some thieves. But man, if there's a fire, you can't get out the windows. What's I don't know the idea of putting bars under windows.
If you're higher on the ground floor, by law you're supposed to have this to unlock your door.
Right.
Or at least, like, the night latch has got a handle. It's called, it's an egress system. So, basically, you don't need to be looking for keys if there's a fire.
Yeah.
So, you can unlock everything with your hands. You know, you're not waiting, I can't find my keys unlocked in.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
By law, you've got to have those fire regulators. On the ground floor, if the lock fails, you can't find your key, you've got windows.
Unless the windows have bars on them.
Exactly, yeah. Angle grinder.
Yeah. A lot of properties in London have these basements and there's only one exit. And so if there's a fire at the exit, then you're... I don't know how people can live in basements, man, in London. Like, all these rented apartments under the ground.
Yeah. Fences and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's been built properly, it should have passed fire regulations, so there must be some other escape way, excuse me, to pass regulations, or it's been done illicitly. So it's under the radar, and obviously they're not going to have the buildings checked.
Mm-hmm. Cool, so what's the... What's the business like during lockdown for you? Has it been affected anyway?
Yeah, it's been quiet. I mean, there's a variation as such, where people have been locked in. So obviously they're not going anywhere. They go to the shop, come back, lock the door, and then they can't get back out again. And like you said, with the fire regulations and the fire safety, there's one gentleman, fire lever lock. He locked it and went to get out. It wouldn't unlock. He had a window this big. If there was a fire, there's not a, even if it was slim, not a chance of getting through it. One entrance and the tiny windows. So it had to be sorted out, for a health and safety perspective.
As someone almost died in a fire, like when I go to a building, I might always check the fire exits to make sure I know what I'm doing because I don't, you know, it sort of stays with you. You like, I want a way to get out here quick.
Yeah,
I couldn't go out, I
exactly.
couldn't live in a high rise, man. No way. Don't care how
No.
safe, I don't care how safe it is.
I'm surprised they don't have a system like they have on planes. No, at a certain height, you could roll up your balcony and just slide down with the inflatable slides.
Why don't just all these new skyscrapers put like an external staircase on the side of the building? You know, like you look at all these new skyscrapers in London, they're just sheets of glass. There's no way to get out except inside the building. I mean, why pay a
Well,
million, £2 million for a flat? You can't get an escape outside of the window.
But I've always fancied like a fireman's pole. That'd be pretty cool, and the fire is just straight down.
But
It's
difficult for
all
20 floors though.
bulletproof.
You got a strong grip.
You'd have to have ball pull. Something to soften your blow at the bottom of a bouncy castle, maybe, I don't know.
You can actually buy parachutes that open up within like I think it's like 20 meters. You can have like, you know, imagine if you're in a building and you've got guests and you've got the one parachute and you say, okay, I've got the parachute, see you later guys, and jump out. I mean, what do you do in a situation like that? You know what?
Well, unless it comes in the family edition, so you can carry like four children and your wife, but I can't imagine an old dear on a pensioner jumping off a balcony at 88 with a parachute strapped to her.
I just think people are obsessed with living in cities. You know, why we've got all this empty space and land and stuff like that. Why don't we just build more houses outside of the cities and all this? I'm glad that people are leaving London because like we're more space down there to breathe. You know, like because you don't have to be in the office. There's no point actually paying for this. I feel sorry for people that have bought houses before the pandemic hit because the reason that's so high is because you have to, basically people went to the office to work, but now it's like it's just. That's the old way of thinking now. Like an office, what do I need an office for? I might have to, you know.
I mean, I'm lucky in the way that I can work from home because I'm mobile, so I go to people, and they don't need to come and see me. But yeah, if it is a business and you've got an office, like you say, it puts things in perspective. Do you actually need an office now to do your job? And companies are going to save a fortune on home working. But then again, the parents, how do you balance that with childcare?
I think more people are happy to work from home than I think there's been a study. It's like 80 to 90% people are happy with this ongoing remote working from home. And you get a few vocal people on LinkedIn that are saying, oh, it's terrible, you know, working from home and all that stuff. I just reply back and say to them, what are you talking about, you know?
I mean, I can sit down and I have no work if one day, and then tomorrow I might have two or three jobs lined up. I might have one booked in and another two just pop up. So in that respect, I'll give my day not expecting anything. If the job comes, it's a bonus. If it doesn't come, then I'm not going to stress that I'm not working today. I'll just flick on the telly, do something else. A bit of painting. So find something to do.
What are you painting there?
It's just like a dream, something to live in. It's like a little house.
Oh, right,
I've done a set of like that's mushroom. I've done a pumpkin, and it's made into a little house with a windows and door and
yeah.
It's childlike painting, but they were different
Yeah.
styles depending on medium.
So talking about art, are you involved in any like, you could probably be good advertisements for like male grooming products or something, you know, like get your face up on those hairdressers.
No, I don't think
Honestly, I think there's like a version of you in a local barber in London that almost looks exactly like you, you know, that beard.
it's like you've got the. I think you get to an age when you get quite a lot of doppelgangers.
Yeah.
You have pepper colored hair and beard, and you can look like somebody else down, 2 or 3 miles down the road.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, you go to the barber shops and the hair was all sort of hair dryer blown.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, I wouldn't want the same haircut as he had, put it that way.
I seen a picture with you with no beard. You honestly look like 20 years younger. But in this one, you just look like a real macho, like guy like Thor. You know, like or like the guy who played the Winged King on Flash Gordon. You know, forgot his name now.
Brian Blessed.
Blind Blessed, yeah. I was like, it's a great look. I wish I could pull off that. You know, I really would.
You give it a go. You never know.
I can grow a decent beard though, if I wanted to.
Yeah, I say you've got the coloration, so it doesn't look so old. I'll
Yeah.
say it before you do. And having dark hair, I imagine it grows quite quick.
Well, some of it, yeah. The bits that are left.
It does go patchy, but mine's thin at the sides. Compared to here, if I wash it, I look like one of them drowned cats. But on the sides, it's like there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it a go.
So how do people get in touch if they want the locks looked at or something, or f advertising facial products?
I'm pretty much on all social media. And obviously Google. I've got Google pages. I've got my own web page, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. I try and post regular on all of those. And that speaking like this, speaking people, speaking to people, not in a face to face, but in a text or a message. And that's that connection, making it, building connections.
I need to get new headphones. My knees keep falling out my ears. So that's
Yeah, over the head,
yeah,
over the
I've got them, but
headphones.
they make your ears sweat. You know, and I'm not. I've got these like huge ones.
Those. Yeah, it's been a few
I don't
CDs
want
like
to put.
that.
I don't want to put them on now because I'll probably. It takes me so long to set up the audio to do these podcasts. It's like you take it out in GarageBand, it'll freeze, or like this mic will complain, and the audio will start coming out of the mic and all this stuff. And it's just okay. Well, that's been an interesting time.
Yeah, I think some of the things you probably won't not understand the subject, but you won't see where I'm trying to explain stuff because I'm not very good at explaining stuff. Put me in front of something, I can explain it and show a demonstration more of a practical sense.
Yeah.
Whereas a theory of picking locks, I think I'd need diagrams.
How much more innovation do you think people, companies can do with that mechanical locks? Like, what else can they do next?
Yeah, I mean, there are some sort of next level. They reinforce the sensors, which obviously come back to lock snapping, which is quite a few locks out there at the minute like this. We call them trap pins. So even if you pick it, it'll only go so far and then it'll lock up again. So you've got to pick those and then round again, it'll lock up again. So it's going to take time and patience. And you're not going to snap those types of locks because if you did, you're still not getting in. So you're going down the destructive route or the drill route, and you're just wasting time and expense for the customers. So they have evolved somewhat. I do believe that there are further things they can do. I mean, there's guys who do it as a hobby, and they're really good. As you know, they're mainly United. A lot of them are United. So they come home, death job. They come home and they'll sit and pick locks because it gives them something to focus on and something different from the workplace.
Yeah, yeah. I do a physical job or some woodwork or whatever, sawing something, it actually feels really, yeah, really good because like all I do is sit and look at code all day long, you know.
Well, exactly. I mean, imagine like, I used to work in the print industry, so I'd go to work for 12 hours. And I'd be doing the same job, so I could do the job relatively easy, and then I get mentally bored while I'm doing the job. So I got to a point a few years ago. I was raising pigs. So I had 3 pigs in the garden. So I'd tend to those, go to work, come back, tend to them again.
So you said,
and
you...
that just that. Go on.
So you're a printer, you said.
I was a print finisher, book binder.
Right. Okay.
So I finished. So for example, I get printed, and it goes through a machine which puts the glue on the cover and everything. So yeah. that was my job, set up the glue machine, as it were.
Yeah.
So mechanically, again, it's something that I'm more of a hands-on, practical. I can't say. I like. You know, gadgets in geekery, as it were. But geekery. I can't imagine myself being sat on a desk for 8 hours typing.
How about 14 hours?
No. 2 hours tops.
Yeah. Well, I do between 13 and 14 hours a day on a computer, but I'll space that out with like walks and exercise, eating,
yeah,
socializing, you know.
Yeah, I think to some extent, I mean, too much, you know, that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Yeah. You know, it's true to some extent. You've got to have some life above, you know, 14 hours a day work, 8 hours sleep, so that only leaves you know, a few hours.
Yeah, that's a little bit more the extreme end. Probably on average it's 12 or 11 or something, yeah.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, if you take into account your eating, so you sit down, relax, have a meal, you know, ballpark of an hour per meal, just to sit and relax and chat.
An hour a meal?
Yeah, ballpark.
Five minutes, mate, for me, something.
that's a snack. Yeah, if you sort of, obviously, take your time, we'll say 2 hours, for example. So that's 14 hours of your day taken up already. And then you put in things like going to get a drink, toilet breaks, you know, and a little bit of you time going for a walk and keeping yourself healthy. Then you pretty much, what have you got left apart from sleep time?
Yeah, not a lot.
Exactly. I'm a keen advocate of afternoon naps.
Actually, power naps are very good, but you can't take them too longer. If it goes past 10 or 15 minutes, you start to... Yeah, well, what is this variable in JavaScript, you know, like?
According to my app, my health app, it says no more than 30 minutes. More than 30 minutes, yeah.
30 or 13?
13,
okay.
3-0, yeah, Yorkshire. If you go past that, it avoids the optimization of the app.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's an annoying bit, being in the office, that like, you can't take a nap anywhere. It's like you got to just be up for like 8 hours, and then the last 2 hours are just like wanting to go home.
Yeah. Jump out of the nearest window.
Yeah.
I think in, I don't know if it's Japan, where you've got a sleep pod. So when it comes to a break time, you can go have a nap.
Fantastic idea.
It's proven to increase production.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a well. Eventually, I'd like to have. Well, I might have office space if that company's growing stuff. I will sure have a sleep pod in my office, you know, because especially for coders, you know, because I know as a coder myself for 10 years that after about 6 hours, if I'm in a zone, right, I can get enough code done in 3 hours as it would maybe take me 3 days if I'm in a zone. Yeah. There's something about it, and. if I have employees that are coders, I want them to have as much time. I would rather have them 3 hours or 2 hours in the zone and have the rest of the day off than sit for 8 hours just producing mediocre code. And
I think there's a company, I think it's a London-based company, an advertising company, and they said to the manager, you know, we're going to put a timeout, like pod, so you can go in and play out and chill out music, and there's cushions. It's like a little teepee. So in the office space, if anybody goes into that pod, you can't disturb them. So they would go in for 30 minutes and just relax,
read
a book, listen to music, whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it increased production by about 30%.
Yeah.
So, you know, statistically and financially, it's better for a company to do that.
Yeah. I love when Elon Musk says, if you're in a meeting and it's not making any benefit for you or the team, just leave. Yeah. I mean, the amount of meetings that are wasted, unbelievable, you know, just to pay people's salaries to sit there and tick a box that they've done the meeting, you know. It's...
Or the waffle.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have some regular toolbox talks. So, for example, there's a new health and safety legislation or guideline we've got to follow, and you'd be there for half an hour listening to it, and it'd mean nothing to you. As long as you sign the paper at the end, that's all they were concerned about. Yeah, like you said, box ticking.
Cool. Well, anything you want to come up to there over here? Anything you want to share with the audience, David, about locks and your future work planning?
not really. I mean, I'm nothing in the pipeline as such. But other than training to do other sectors of the same job, as it were, other sections of the same sector.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I mean, other than that, I'm pretty much happy all day long. Keep the work coming. That's it.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'll leave a link to your LinkedIn profile, David, and people can go and check out your excellent videos on the locks. And just you bring passion and excitement and men's grooming to the world of locksmithing.
And bearding.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's anything, you know, if you want to learn how to do it on a personal level, just give me a shout and I'll try to talk you through things. And
yeah,
you know, because it is an invaluable skill for anybody to learn.
Yeah,
imagine being kidnapped. How are you going to get out of your handcuffs?
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit cool. Like people, you know, like spy. Kind of like, I can pick this lock, and people think, "Whoa, you can pick a lock," you know. Like...
Just quickly there, I mean, I went to a customer, I changed one of the locks, and I had problems, so I went back and sorted it out. And he said, I've got to wait for the boss to come. I haven't got a key to lock up. So I said, look, I'll lock it, and then I'll drop you home, because it's not far. So he's like, well, can you lock it? Well, if I can unlock it, then I can lock it.
Right, I see.
So it's like that thing, like you say, with the espionage, the secret agent, as it were.
Yeah.
You can get in and get out, and nobody'd know you've been. And I, you know, in that respect, it's like, you know, where's my tuxedo?
Because, like, yeah, if you didn't actually study how a lock works, you'd be surprised how complicated it is. It's a very clever invention.
It's actually around, it was invented by the Egyptians. So basically, it was like a pin tumbler with the pin fitment, as it were. But it was like bars on a wooden piece. So they put a hand through and slot the wooden things in to be able to open the door.
Right.
So it's been around for 2,000 plus years as a locking mechanism. Locksmith derives from blacksmith, because they used to make all the locks wooden. And wrought iron, cast iron, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the locksmith stemmed from blacksmith. So it's one cast develops another cast.
I mean, the whole idea of this pin and tumbler system, like if I didn't know what a lock was, and I was given a blank slate and told me, you need to secure this door. What would you do? I would probably think, come up with some like big steering wheel that weighs like only I can lift up because I'm strong, and then it's maybe a big square that fits in there, and you have to turn out all this stuff, and like you can open the door by strength or something like. But I wouldn't think to make up this little tumbler with like springs at different heights and all that stuff, and then some metal slings. It's very clever. Good on
Yeah,
Egyptians.
I can imagine. I can imagine you creating the submarine door on your flat. So yeah, I mean, in that respect, it's clever. But in the same throw of a stone, as it were, the insurance criteria for UPVC is a minimum of 3 locking points. They don't actually mention the lock,
Yeah.
and that's the weak link. So yeah. It doesn't make sense.
I've always been amazed at like if you're thinking about a force that's used to turn the key and how many mechanical points are actually moved on those PVC doors, it's very well lubricated or like very well balanced mechanics to do that.
I mean, your control point is where the handle is. So when you lift the handle up or push the handle down, it works on like a push rod system.
Oh, so it's not the key that does that then, right? Ah, that's
There are some systems called the key wind, and it's like a little geared internal. So when you turn the key, things come out gradually.
Right.
Whereas the ones where you lift the handle, they all come out together because they work on a push rod from a central gearbox.
Right, I see.
So the key will lock the gearbox in position. That's all the key does. So that's why I say with lock snapping, you take that out of the equation. You can get to everything else.
Okay, cool. Oh well, okay, David, that's been great. Thanks for being the first official Learn Engineering sh on my Learn With Us podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been we got there eventually, but it's been quite funny.
Yeah. Cool. We'll get this on LinkedIn and be in touch.
Yeah. Well, say anytime you want to chat, just give me a shout.
Okay, Dave.
Right.
Okay, everybody, that was
So now.
David Lofthouse and the locksmith you need if you live in. Where's he living in?
Late.
Leeds. Okay, until next time, see you later. Bye bye.